When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
He was dying for him for a week, for a couple of pennies.
He would.
Oh, he was a good man. He was the best man came round in a year. I can't see anybody would beat him. Because he got up from nothing.
I was married to a son of Paddy the Corpse, Packy the Corpse. And he's dead since October 1958. So the boss was, as he was called, Paddy the Corpse, lived with us. From I got married until his death on the 24th of June, 66.
So you looked after him then in his final years?
We looked after him in his final years, and did very little trouble he was. He was very easy to get on with, a very good, kind man. We always got on very well together. He didn't change an awful lot in manner, or I should say in appearance. He didn't age, you know, he didn't look his years at all. And he was quite... He was a hard-working man. His heart and soul was in the Temple Corn Co-op Society. He lived for it. I say it was his first thought at night and his last thought. His last thought at night, I should say, and his first thought in the morning. He was a very good living man, a great Catholic, a great churchgoer, a great Christian.
Paddy's great strength was that he hadn't any idea on anything except the Co-op itself, and he dedicated himself completely to it. And... it was really his venture. The committee was a very dim body in the background to be consulted when he had made the decisions, or to be drawn and to endorse it when he had made the decisions. But he really never had a selfish thought apart, I think, from his dedication to the Hope. He had that great. And he really had that great touch. He was a good businessman, but nothing more than that. The area was roused, and the area rallied to him. There was a good deal more knowledge of cooperation in that area than perhaps in any other part of Ireland, on account of the intercourse with Scotland.
Well, I knew him very well because he used to spend a lot of his time in my home. My mother was his sister. And he didn't get along so well. They used to sometimes be very annoyed at some of the things he would do. And I remember one time that they wanted him to pay more wages to the factory workers. And he said it would be better to put a bite in everybody's mouth than some people eating cake.
He was a lovable, humorous type of fellow. Grand and full of fun, you know. And as far as being, if you're a clergyman, he just lay down before you. He was full of regard for you. And plumas, a certain amount of plumas. He was full of rascality too, you know. I remember one occasion he wanted me to say mass out in Clindra Rock.
And that's a mass rock.
A mass rock, yeah.
Which is right opposite the place he was born in.
That's right. He claimed that he was born on it, actually. when he wanted permission to have mass said there, he went to the bishop. And he said, "My lord, would you give me permission to say mass on the rock, or get mass said on the rock I was born on?"
Well, it was almost true. The house is right under the rock.
Yeah, that's right. But anyhow, when he asked me, he was all as usual, all smiles and everything, you know. And for some reason or other, I was reluctant at the particular time to go up. And when he saw this, he changed like lightning. And the steel came through him. You know, the steel of the character came through, and gone was every vestige of a smile. "Well," he says, "if you don't want to do it, there's plenty more will." And walked away as angry as could be.
He'd never wear a collar and tie, and he never wore an overcoat. He'd go off to Dublin, but he'd take the collar and tie off and stick it in his pocket. You know, he'd never... He was one time in Dublin when the factory was going good down here, and he saw this lady walking around O'Connell Street, and she had a Fair Isle jumper on. And he decided he would follow around and take the pattern of the Fair Isle jumper. So he took out a notebook, and he was taking the pattern as he was going along, following her everywhere through the street. and she called a guard. So he had a time explaining to the guard what he was doing, following the lady.
Yes.
So he said, it wasn't you I was following, it was your jumper.
Yes. And then he would use the pattern himself.
He would use the pattern in the factory then.
Paddy the Cope was just a man about, I would say, a wee stout man, not very big. I don't know, I couldn't just describe just what height, but he wasn't too high. He wasn't much more than 5 foot, or 5 foot so many inches. But he was a stout, but little man. He, as far as I know about him, he went to school in them days. And in them days, the people here used to have, you would only spend 3 months would be the most, and not very many would get 3 months. You spent 3 months at school, and the other 9 months had to be utilized for to try to earn money for the big families. Every house in them in this parish in them days had from 10 to 14 of a family.
Patrick Gallagher, afterwards known as Paddy the Cope, was born on Christmas night 1871 in the townland of Clindra, about 3 miles west of Dunloe in the Rosses of Donegal. He was the second eldest of 9 children, 7 girls and 2 boys. His schooling was scanty, and he has described in his autobiography how, at the age of 10, he walked the 37 miles from Clindra to Ballybuffet on his way to the hiring fair in Strabane. His nephew-in-law, Michael James Gallagher, who lives just beside the ancestral home, told us what those early years were like.
When he was 12 years of age, himself and some other boy left here, and they walked up to Fintown. And he used to go train that in Fintown to Derry. And they got in as far as, they came off of Strabane, down to Derry, and then came back up again to Strabane. And they seen this farmer anyhow, or this farmer seen the two boys standing at this corner anyhow, the town clock, I used to call it. And he asked them what they wanted. So this boy says, I want £3.10. This Paddy the Cope now. And your man told him to take a walk up and down the street to see what kind of build had he. So he admired him anyhow. He used to always be a small, stout punch. So he thought he would suit him fairly well anyhow. And when he came back, your man offered him £2.10. So this other man at the time made the deal, and he made it £3 anyhow. So got in a trap anyhow, and out to the farm anyhow. And from the farmer's wife seeing him anyhow, she gave him a bucket, and she says, come on out here to milk the cow. So Paddy never milked a cow in his life before, so he couldn't. So the farmer's wife says, come in to the farmer, well, I think you have a dud this time anyhow. She says, I think we'd put him home again. So the farmer says, no, he's a good stout neck, and we'll do fine for the harvest anyhow. I think it's £3 he got for the 6 months. Mm. Next step after that was Scotland.
That'll be for the Tattyhokin, would it?
I think he went to Tattyhokin for 1 year, and then he met some man at the Tattyhokin, and he got to work in the pits. And he can be a good boozer in his early days. And he stayed over there in Scotland. He wasn't married that time, I don't think.
No.
And his father had to go over for him and to come back home here. So he got married in years after that, and he got off the booze anyhow.
His wife obviously had a big influence on him, hadn't she?
She was a good help to him. I think he would never do anything unless he would ask her advice on it first. And she would tell him to go ahead, he would, but if she would stop him, he wouldn't ask to go against her anyhow.
His wife, Sally, certainly had a great influence on Paddy's future, and so had Scotland. Mickey Joe Boyle of Ireland's near Burtonport.
Paddy the Cope started in Tarbrax along with the shell mines, and then he came, it was up in the mountains, and he came to the cooperative for to arrange for boots and beer and all to be taken up, and he discovered from 40 the discount he got that he came over here and started the cup. And when he came over, he started very small. With the result, with all the people who were against him, the shopkeepers had a meeting, you see, and they held meetings everywhere. And anybody who was dealing in a shop at that time, who was getting credit, everyone was drawing credit, they had to go at night to the Cope, or if they were found going to the Cope, they would get no credit after, till Paddy got the Cope got going on.
People go there and get the stuff off these shops, you see, and they didn't know what price they're paying for, just get the stuff, and then when the bill would come, probably at the end of the year, they wouldn't know what, people didn't tally up or didn't know what pricing was. They might be paying 4 or 5 times the price of everything, you see, and they didn't even know it. Aye, the people seen into it that when Paddy started up, that even that you couldn't pay for it on the spot, well, you got a ticket or something, you knew the price of it, yeah. And I think if you couldn't pay for it then, if you only give them a day's work, like, well, that kind of squared up things or helped them out some way. So that's why this lady, my mother here, said he went to jail. There was another big store there in Dunlow to Edward Boyle's, and he was running for a county councillor, and the copeman was running for the county councillor. So the copeman was up on the platform anyhow, and he was making a speech, and he mentioned something about these Gambine men. So he was put in jail for 6 months, and eventually he got out of jail anyhow and reinstated again, and this is how. Oh, they're a big night. The night he came, I heard them saying, their lorries lined the way and bonfires from Dury right down to Dunlow. They're glad to see him back again.
Paddy the Cope, in fact, spent only a couple of days in jail after he had refused to go under a rule of bail to be of good behaviour. The charge against him was a slight enough one, that he had incited the law-abiding people of the Rosses to commit a breach of the peace by threatening that he would kill Gombeanism. However, he was now the people's hero in the fight against the traitors of Dunlow.
Here in this country, you had people they called Gambine men. Now, I'm not going to mention any names, I'm going to take nobody into it or nobody out of it, but there was men here in Ireland as bad as what the landlords were in England. Do you know what they used to do? It didn't make any difference whether you had money or whether you hadn't money. You got credit till the end of the year, do you understand, on your purchases. You got a book, all your purchases was marked in the book, whether you had money or whether you hadn't money, it wouldn't be taken to the end of the year. The price had to be paid for whatever the goods cost, do you understand me? And very near as much interest or what they call gambling on what was purchased. That was, so to speak, paid twice.
And then they had a grip on the poor people as
they
well.
Had
they were
a grip
under
on
obligation.
The poor, they were under obligation because they used to. They had no other option, only to try and get all they possibly could from these people. And they had that grip on them, and they couldn't.
Well, Paddy had a big struggle then against the Gombeen men before he was able to establish the court.
Paddy had to fight the Gombeen men, and he had to fight many a man. He was the greatest man that ever was. He had an exceptional great patience. If he didn't get on, you couldn't get him to quit. If he didn't get on now,
he'd have another
try again, have another go. And he was full of self-determination. And he kept on going. And they got up again. When he came across here first, whatever he seen in the cooperative movement over by, it was over in Scotland, that he got the instinct that he had about cooperation. Whatever he seen over by, he came to the conclusion that it wouldn't be a bad proposition if he could carry on the same here.
73-year-old Willie Dornan of Crowvey, whose father subscribed one of the 14 half-crowns on which the Templecrone Co-op was founded in 1906. How that came about, we now hear from Paddy the Cope himself, in a recording made by Sean McRaman in Sean Kennedy's house in Dunlow 25 years ago.
After I got married, Sally and I went over to Scotland. I was a miner, and I run into a, what was known then as a soft place, and were not in a few years. I was earning £1 a day. In a few years, we had lodgers, and she ran the house and the lodgers, and I was not very long. We got £700 or £800 saved, so we made up for a baby coming in. And the sister wrote to her and said, Sally, you must come home. Your baby must be Irish. And Sally came home, and then I came home after her. And we bought a little place out in Clindra. And after we started to work on the little farm in it, we began to inquire about artificial manures. And Sally was good education. I couldn't read, but she read something about nitrogen. And I came in to look for nitrogen. And the trader wouldn't supply me with nitrogen, she didn't stock it. And then we met, the neighbours all carried, we in my house the night, and my father's house the next night, and the neighbour's house the next night, all the townland gathered together, and they would sing songs, dance and tell stories. And I told them about the artificial manure, so we decided to collect as much money as would buy a wagon. We sent the money to the manufacturers, and they returned it. They refused to supply, said we have to deal with their ordinary traders. We sent it then to Dublin, to the Cooperative Wholesale Society in Dublin, and they returned it and said they're only dealing with societies. A strange thing it is that I'm one of the directors of the Cooperative Wholesale Society in Dublin now. But long before I became director, they decided to sell their manures to anybody. I had nothing to do with that. They sell it now to any person that wants it. So we got the manures home, and then the traders had a meeting. They decided, at that meeting, they suggested it was interfering with legitimate business, and the shop boys got more bitter than the traders themselves. And the shop we were dealing in, my wife went over with her basket of eggs. And the shop boy said to her, didn't bitter the time of day. Up to that, he would say, how are you, Mrs. Gallagher? Tell Mr. Gallagher not to kill himself working. And two customers in front, he served them. And the next girl came in, he served her, and he didn't bitter the time of day. And she said, Neil, he's still in America. Neil Campbell, she said, you're not going to take my eggs. Give me goods in exchange. And he says, what do you want? What do you want? And finally, He took the eggs and gave the goods in exchange, and she came home, and I was out with the wee plough in the field, and she called me in when the tea was ready, and she said, Paddy, take your tea. She says, but I'm not going back to that shop again. You must start a cooperative society.
Paddy the Cope had a great sense of the dramatic, and there was a good deal of the showman in him, as when, for example, he chartered a boat to bring foodstuffs from Glasgow to Burtonport during what he said was a blockade of the Rosses by the big unionist merchants of Derry. The writer, Padraig O'Donnell, must be one of the few who were not impressed.
He played the clown a great deal, showing off. That was a kind of vanity in him. But these are minor weaknesses compared to his great achievement in building the Cope. I mean,
there was a great drama, too, in his bringing in supplies by boat.
Well,
to
that was part of the showmanship. And I mean, there was no reason why lorries couldn't go out and take stuff in. And the railway was cut at Letterkenny. But there was no blockade. And Paddy talked of running the blockade, which was just nonsense. There was no such thing as a blockade.
But there was a genuine struggle with the Gombeen men, wasn't there?
Well, the Gombeen men have been... They have been, I think, badly wronged in the picture of them that emerged. They undoubtedly, nobody ever heard of a Gombeen man evicting anybody, not like the landlord time. But the Gombeen men give long credit to weak families and very often paid the fare to America for the eldest boy or girl and had to wait for their money. I'm sure they charged considerable interest on the debts, but they did a useful service in holding the families together until they were able to earn their
And yet they weren't very popular, obviously.
Well, they weren't popular to the intellect. The shopkeepers were the home rulers, and they got left behind in the struggle for independence. But Paddy himself had no ideas either of that. It wasn't that. It was his customers swept on past the shopkeepers. Paddy went with his customers.
Was Paddy really a capitalist at heart, do you think?
No, I don't think. You couldn't say he was a capitalist, a man that had no concern for advancing himself completely at all. He was just building up the cope. He was very anti-trade union and sacked on the spot the fellow who talked about introducing a trade union into the shop. That was a weakness in him. He really wanted to run the whole show himself, and he had a fear that the coming in of the trade unions would interfere with his freedom of choice, decisions, and so on.
The success of Patrick Gallagher's Temple Crone Cooperative Society has perhaps obscured the fact that it was by no means the first co-op in Donegal. Patrick Bulger, Development Officer for Donegal and author of the Comprehensive History and Development of the Irish Cooperative Movement, published earlier this year.
In fact, by 1906, there had been over 60 cooperatives of different types set up in the county. A great number of these were the agricultural credit banks, the village banks, as they were known, and the Raiffeisen system that evolved in Germany, and which were very similar to our modern-day credit unions. Paddy's story is very interesting historically, from the point of view that he's a very clear link with the English movement. As you know, that the Rochdale retail store movement is commonly pinned down to the little cotton town of Rochdale in Lancashire, 1844, where the 28 poor weavers of Rochdale started their little shop. Now, Paddy's contact was in Scotland, where this movement had developed, and there was a Rochdale-type little retail shop in Pumperstown, where he worked, you see, and where his wife, his good wife Sally, whom he speaks of so affectionately in his book, she bought all her groceries, she collected a dividend on purchases, she saved up money every week and put it away. In fact, this was the method through which he bought the Cleandra farm. And he came back and settled in Cleandra outside Dunloe. His first contact with the new modern cooperative movement in Ireland, Plunkett and Father Tom Finlay and the people, was with the Agricultural Credit Bank in Dunloe, which had been started in 1903.
During the war, First World War, things got very bad, and credit was stopped by all the shopkeepers. But by the Coop took out a money, a currency of his own, and he issued anybody wanted credit, he lent them 10 or 20 or 30 pounds. But that had to be, that was only transferable by buying goods, you see, in the Coop. So it worked all right. But Paddy the Coop done more for Dunloe and the area than all the TDs that ever was. And he hadn't much education, but he had good brains. At the time of the credit, he gave them the chance that time by issuing his own money. He got all the girls in the country, he started the factories, he started everything. And he took a chance, he never looked. He never judged nothing but go ahead. He went away one day to Scotland with a boat load of herring. A small boat, I think it was Connie Devenny's. And everyone thought he was mad, he landed over in Scotland.
He was the first man to bring a trawler to Donegal. That was a big trawler now, like. And he bought two of them. I remember seeing them, like, from the very old. and he used to fish off killybegs. So salt that him was very hard to get, like there was no, didn't get in much salt at a time. So this thing he decided then to bring a load of herring across to Aberdeen in Scotland and to bring back a load of salt. So he brought over the herring to Aberdeen and he had no license, so they wouldn't take the herring from him. So for whoever he got in contact in Glasgow, some of them men that started them co-ops there too, they helped him and he got rid of the load of herring. He sold them. And he brought back a load of salt then. And that was the start of it.
What use did he make of the salt?
For curing herring in Burton Port. And he used to, what they call kippers, make kippers at him, you know, smoke them. And he had a good few people employed there fishing too. And even small boats, half-deckers they call them too.
He was a pioneer then in the fishing business?
Oh, he was, yes. Aye. And
would you say he did a lot to encourage the fishing around Burton Port, to help it along?
These big boats, I would say, there would never be a big boat around here running for them. They've seen then, they've got new nets then, these trawling nets. And after that then, some of the boys there bought other boats too. And that was the start of the trawlers and killybegs in Burton Port.
During the war, had it not been for Paddy the Cope, the people in this part of the country would have a very difficult time to survive. He went over to England and he chartered boats, and the block hated him. And he brought over the necessaries of life for the people right into the pier in Dunloe and distributed then through the cooperative movement.
That was during the First World
War?
That
was during the 1914 war. He started a factory then, and he was the instigation of putting all the girls to start the first employment here. There was no employment here, only go to County Tyrone. It was the first factory, or it was the first business that was ever started here, was when the war broke out. They were making woolen gloves for the soldiers that was out in Flanders and out at the war, and through whatever information Paddy got from his legal advisors in Belfast or Dublin or wherever he was, that was the preposition that he started a factory. He had the factory. It was an old hall that the cooperative built for holding meetings beforehand, and it was transformed into a factory. All was to be got was the machinery, and the machinery were got, and there was up to 300 and 400 girls working there and making gloves, and they used to tow the gloves at night, finish the fingering or the tone, and then he had a crowd of hand knitters knitting as well. Rough hand-knitted gloves for the cold winter, and it threw a terrible lot of employment. Had it not been for Paddy the Cope during that time, the people would have no means of existence at all.
In the slump which followed World War I, many store co-ops fell asunder, but Templecrone managed to survive that crisis as it had survived many others. Pat Bulger.
Paddy had a few good years behind him, starting in 1906, you see, and he, all over the years of the war, he had capitalised and run a pretty good business. He suffered too, you know, but he was able to survive, where the ones that were formed during the war years, and towards the latter end of the war years, if you read my book, you'll notice that cooperation was really coming to be understood and believed in, you know. But then the co-ops that had been set up in 1917, 1918, 1919, they hadn't much time to establish themselves. The economy of the Rosses, now, it's still, although the agriculture is essentially a very poor one, it's still one of the big earners. Tourism is another, and the fishing. There was major involvement in all these things by Templecrone in the pre-1920 days, and indeed even later. You know, this has declined, and far from being a multi-purpose comprehensive co-op, I think it has closed in very much into being a retail Rochdale type of a job. Nothing wrong with that, but the idea of AE, of a cooperative comprehending all a community's business, I think that was an idea that was lost, you see, after the 20s, but it's coming back very strongly now, and I think this is where Temple Crone must reach out now again to become a multi-purpose comprehensive co-op.
The present-day all-purpose store of Temple Crone Co-op occupies a large stretch of the main street of Dunloe. The Cope also runs a bakery and a knitwear factory and has 6 service centres in the Rosses. It employs up to 90 people and has a turnover of about £2 million. But with all this expansion, has it in fact become more removed from the ordinary people, from the more intimate cooperative involvement of the early days? Pather O'Donnell.
No, I don't think it has. I don't think it's really a cooperative store now, because there's no really important rival in the town, and we have a shopkeeper. In the eyes of the people, it's their shop, and I suppose that's as good a definition of cooperation as you want to get.
And it's still very important in the Dunloe area and all around the Rosses.
Oh, it's still very influential. It's a trading enterprise, and Paddy had a very sharp eye for opportunity. He did the bakery and did the lighting of the town, did all that sort of thing. The anything that was any possibility there was of developing something that was for the good of the co-op, Paddy would pounce on it.
Pat Bulger thinks that the Temple Crone of today suffers from a disability common to nearly every co-op, a lack of interest and commitment on the part of members, and a failure to involve them on the part of the committee.
As a people, the Irish people, more so perhaps than any other people in the world, were very sensitive to what we call the half-hearted invitation. It's not enough to write out a formal notice of the annual general meeting. I think the
and send that out to the members and expect them to assemble.
I think then the members of the management committee must reach out to the individual member and embrace them and get them in. You have to bring them in. When you have them in, you have to have something for them to do. You must make some new departures. Paddy, the Cope, was a great man, a great entrepreneur. He built great structures, business structures in many ways. But cooperative education, in the real sense, never got off the ground in the Rosses, and I dare say it hasn't got off the ground yet. You know, and I think this is something that we will have to get involved in, because the lifeblood, even the economic success of a venture, depends so much on this.
And of course, a great deal of the success of the Temple Crone Co-op depended on the personality of its founder and on the way people identified with him. Dr. Eugene McDermott of Arranmore, who was curate for many years in the Cope's native parish of Mina Crusha.
I think you remember him most by the shops, but I think the ordinary person remembers him best by the lorries he put on the road. The Cope lorry, here comes the Cope lorry. And you remember all the lads that used to work in the Cope. There was a whole gang of them. There was a whole army of boys who were working in the Cope, you know.
But in a way, it's no longer the kind of co-op that was there in the original days when you had the ordinary people concerned in it. It's now just a big supermarket in a way.
I suppose that is so. But still in all, people feel that they have a sort of a communal interest in it, you know. You still take shares in it, I think. Mm. And you still feed, but certainly I suppose it's different to what it was in the beginning. Yeah, when there was the old committee and when they decided things themselves. It's different to that now.
And then the Cope himself was a large part of it.
He was, yeah. Yeah.
And his own personality.
His own personality. People liked him very much. They were very fond of him. You saw that everywhere he went. You know, he was a character in his own right. And he was very popular too for speaking on public occasions. And he could be so humorous, you know, and it suddenly changed the trend of conversation, you know, with a humorous twist. I was talking about one time, I remember, a speech in regard to Ethna Carberry down in Frosses. And, you know, he talked about the places he was. I was in America, I was in Saskatchewan, I was in Newfoundland, and I was in jail, he said.
He was responsible for taking the light to town. He used to go out to the dam there, the dam, the water out here for the light. And he used to go out to the dam himself when some of the boys at night would switch off the dam and leave us in darkness. And he would go out himself and get into the dam and dam it up again to get the light back.
He always worked hard, apparently.
Worked hard, and he worked with the people. We would think nothing of going into the mines out in Crowey and working along with the men. I think that's why the men liked him so well, you know. He done his share of the work too, and he was very good to his workers, very good.
Yeah, and yet there were little mean streaks in him too. You know, he could be mean about small amounts of money.
He would be very small in little things. You know, he'd be very miserable in little things, and then he would think nothing of going out and helping somebody that he would need help. Sisters used to be always kind of on his back, you know, telling him he was doing too much and that he wasn't doing things right. Of course, if he got an idea, he would go through with it, and his ideas would fail, and they would be always given out to him that it was crazy doing these things. But he kept at it, you know, and some of his ideas were very bright, and he got away with them. There was lots of things he would do, you know, that the sisters used to be embarrassed at him. Little things. The time Barbara Moore was, the papers were giving a big write-up to Barbara Moore, he used to sunbathe, and he would follow up her diets very much, and he used to fish a lot. He eat an awful lot of fish, oatmeal porridge. But we used to get on to him for sunbathing in the nude, because he would go out to the yard and sunbathe in the nude, and we...
He wouldn't worry who saw him.
Oh, not at all. It didn't worry him at all. No, he couldn't care less.
He was a great man for walking too.
Yeah, he walked a lot. Yeah, he used to walk all round the place. He was a very healthy man, and I think it was his diet mostly. He'd eat an awful lot of fish, and he used to get eels, a certain type of an eel, and cook it. And one time, there's little sheens that fish along the shore here. And one time he decided he was going to can these sheens. And he tried one of them out on me, of course, but it wasn't a success. He used to like honey. And he had a very sweet tooth. He liked to have a lot of little dainty sweets, like desserts of any kind. He was very fond of desserts. And I think myself that it was due to the way he eat. He did take a drink, but I never saw him drunk. I never saw him in his life drunk.
Oh yes, he was full of life, you know, full of life. Didn't worry, I would say he was a man that didn't worry a lot, you know. He was confined to bed for a few years before he died, you know. But he was no great trouble, I must say. He was very good, and we missed him an awful lot when he went, because he had lived with us so very long. He was a great miss.
He was 95 or 6 almost when he died.
He was in his 95th year. You'd have been. He was born on Christmas Day, and very proud of it. Very proud of it. He said he was born with a cowl, one of these kit caps, you say. He was very proud of the fact he was born on a Christmas Day. So he was just 6 months short of his 95th birthday when he went.
He never smoked at all, I believe.
Never smoked. Never.
He liked a wee dram, though.
He did. Now and again, you know, he was far from being an alcoholic, I must say. But he liked a wee dram now and again, as opposed to it was a boost. And in latter years, he liked his wee drop of punch.
Mm. And they say, too, that like many big business tycoons, yeah, you know, we could be very careful about small things, small amounts.
Small amounts is right. He looked after every iota. Mind you, there'd be no waste paper or waste cord lying about when he was around.
No, Paddy the Cook never made anything for himself. He was all for the coop. And when he died, I don't think he had much money left, because they were all into the coop. And he didn't leave any of his family rich or, you know, He made no provision for anything, only for the cook.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.